We're holding on page 4 in Sanhedrin, second line from the bottom, middle of Ois Gimel. We were learning yesterday about the matter of when a dayan is and isn't allowed to recuse himself from a case. So Rish Lakish had said, or we said maybe it's not Rish Lakish, or Yehuda ben Lakish, whatever, had said that before you start hearing the Din Torah, or at least when you don't know yet which way the verdict is likely to go, then if you have a reason, if the guy's a Baal Din Kosher, which we learned, Rashi learns basically that he's a Nudnik, and he's going to be bugging you to change your verdict, and Tosfa says it may be even more than that, it may be that he's actually going to physically threaten you physically or financially, as the case may be. So then you're allowed to say, I'm not going to get involved with the case. But afterwards, once you know, then you can't say that. The Torah tells us you're not allowed to be afraid of any person. We talked about yesterday, there's quite a variety of opinions among Rishonim and eventually in Piske Halacha, when he is and isn't allowed to recuse himself, what kind of danger would warrant that? Anyway, so the Gemara continues, more meanings of Loisa Guru Mipneish. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha Omer, Minayin the Talmud Shiyoshev Lifnei Rabbi. How do we know a Talmud is sitting in front of his Rebbe? So he's not, the Talmud himself is not one of the members of the Beis Din. He's, what? Page 4 in Sanhedrin, bottom of the page. So Minayin the Talmud Shiyoshev Lifnei Rabbi. A Talmud is sitting in front of his Rebbe. So he's not a member of the Beis Din. He's just an onlooker. He realizes, as the Din Torah is going on, he realizes that the poor, let's say it's a poor and a rich versus a rich person, and he realizes there's a particular argument that can be brought in favor of the poor person, which would then be to the detriment of the rich person. I mean, it could be the other way around also, of course, but that when we talk about that he's more likely to not say anything, it would be more likely in that case. How do we know he shouldn't be quiet? Now, he might be quiet, Rashi points out of covered for his Rebbe. He may figure to himself, if my Rebbe doesn't realize this point, then maybe I shouldn't be bringing it up. That would be disrespectful to him, as though, like, he didn't realize this point. Another obvious point is that he might do that because out of fear of the rich person. Or if not out of fear, at least out of, Tosfos points out, if nothing else, out of respect for the rich person, maybe. So how do we know? How do we know that the Talmud is not allowed to be quiet? He has to speak up and mention the point. Shenema, again, because the Pasuk says, don't be afraid of another person, of any person. And that means, in other words, even though he himself is not the Dayan, he himself is only an onlooker, nevertheless, he has to not be afraid. And Rav Chanan Omer, the word loisaguru doesn't just mean don't be afraid. The shodesh gur can also mean loisachnis dvarecha mipnei ish. Don't hold in your words because of a person. So in other words, Tosfos says, we're not necessarily talking about fear. He's not fearful of the rich person, maybe, but he might think to hold back his words out of respect. Respect for his Rebbe, as Rashi says, or respect for the rich person, as Tosfos says. So the word loisaguru also means to not hold back. Further on, the Gemara is going to point out, you have a pasuk, for example, oigir bakayitz, which describes somebody who stores up grain or produce or whatever during the summer. As an industrious person, as opposed to a person who just lets the summer, who fritters the summer away and then has nothing in the winter. So we see that the word oigir means to gather, and so the word loisaguru also means the same thing. Don't gather in and hold back your words.
Worried about the bushes of the Rebbe, why don't we say ein chokma ve'ein tvunah?
Well, that's it. Okay, that's the point. Well, ein chokma ve'ein tvunah is where there's chilul Hashem involved, where somebody is blatantly doing an aveira. Here we're not necessarily talking about, there's no aveira involved. His Rebbe overlooked a particular point that would be in favor of one of the Baal Adin. It might end up, after all, and it's not necessarily because the Talmud points out this fact, is not necessarily going to change the verdict either. It might be, you know, the Rebbe will consider the point and say, you know what, I hear what you're saying, but nevertheless, you know, a different posik says differently, or there's another factor over here that you, Talmud, are not considering. So we're not talking about there's no chilul Hashem when ein chok in kavod l'rav, but nevertheless there is this loisaguru. He's obligated to speak up. Later on in the Sechta, by the way, it talks about that you even have, when it comes to Dinei Nefoshes, you can have a case where one of the Talmidim who are sitting in front of the Beis Din realizes something that might be in favor of the defendant, and then they actually promote him, at least temporarily, to be one of the Dayanim, and he can actually discuss it with the other Dayanim, including his Rebbe, and even be one of the votes to acquit the guy. But here we're talking Dinei Mominus, so you don't have the same kind of thing, but still he has to at least speak up. Okay. Then the Braisa continues. The Edom should realize who they're saying Edos on behalf of. Now, on the face of it, they're only saying Edos on behalf of Boss of Adam. But the fact is, they're also saying, as it's as if they're testifying about Hashem. Rashi points out later on, the Gemara explains that, we'll get to it in the next couple of days, Rashi Hashem, that after all, if the Dayanim judge the case wrongly, if they come to a wrong verdict, and they say, let's say, for example, Reuven is liable to pay Shimon, when in fact he should have been Potter, then they're, so to speak, they're putting Hashem on the hook. Hashem is now going to have to arrange things that Reuven should get back that money that he lost unjustly. So therefore, so that Edom should realize that they're not just testifying against the boss of Adam, they're testifying regarding Hashem. The Lefnei Hem Edom, they should also realize before whom they're testifying, that Hashem is present in the Beis Din over there, the Kimnitza Badas Kael, or Mi Osev, the Paramehem, and who is going to punish them if they testify falsely. In fact, later on in the Masechta, it talks about how they're ma'aymin, they warn the Edom and explain to them and try to scare them about the severity of testifying falsely with Dinin Nefoshes all the more so, because they could end up killing a person. But even by Dinin Mominus, they make it very clear to them that if you're testifying falsely, we tell them, the Gemara has a discussion over there, what exactly we tell them. We end up telling them, you should realize if you're testifying falsely, if not just you're committing an Aveda, you should also realize that anybody who knows that, for example, let's say you took a bribe to testify, you should realize even the guy who's bribing you is going to look down on you for that you're such low down people that you would do such a thing. So like this, though, they should realize that Hashem is going to punish them if they testify falsely. Now, of course, to be sure, Ion Yaakov points out, I mean, that's true of every Aveda, but still, other Avedas, Hashem may delegate it to a Shliach, but here Hashem himself is going to punish them directly. So that's me also, the part of Mehem, that Hashem is going to punish them directly. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, V'omdu shneha noshim, ashalahem hadriv lifnei Hashem. The two people who have the quarrel should stand before Hashem. Now, on the face of it, that means the Baal Edin, but Rashi points out, the Gemara tells us in Shavuos, that Pasuk is actually talking about the Edin. From there, we learn that the Edin have to stand when they're giving their Edos, because there's V'omdu. Furthermore, continues the Braisa, this is either Rabbi Yeshua ben Kocho or Rabbi Chanin talking, the Dayanim should also realize whom they're judging, because again, they're not only judging the Baal Edin over there, they're in effect judging Hashem as well. But if name Mihem Donim, and before whom they're judging, that again Hashem is present, or me also be part of Mehem, and who is going to punish them if they go and pervert justice. Shenema, as the Pasuk said, like Kim Nitzah Badas Kael, Hashem stands in the congregation of Hashem, meaning in the Beis Din, Bekerav Elikim Yishpot, Hashem judges among Elikim, which as we talked about yesterday, Elikim means, among other things, means the Dayanim, in particular Dayanim, who have the original Smicha Ishmipiyish. So they should realize, in other words, this is serious business over here, and you can't play around with it. So in both cases, again, as Rashi says, Marshal types out in more detail, it means again that they're being Matriyah Hashem to set things right if they judged wrongly. We find something similar with Yehoshaphat. Yehoshaphat was one of the Malchi Yehuda. It mentioned in Divrei Yomim, it tells about how at one point during his reign, he sent a group of Kohenim and Levim to circulate around Eretz Yisrael and teach the people Torah and set up Bate Dinim and establish Bate Dinim to judge people. And he tells them, Yomer Lashriftim, and he tells the judges, Ru'u Ma'atim Osim, look and pay attention to what you're doing, Ki Loila Adam Tishvatu. You're not just judging people. You're judging on behalf of Hashem, and you're judging Hashem in effect. So in other words, you should realize that this is serious business. Marshall types this out. In other words, look, a person dying might think that. And if I judge wrongly, so what? I didn't do a maaseh. I gave a verdict. So he tells them, no, mu'umatem oisim. See what you're doing, because the fact is, by you judging wrongly, the result is there's going to be a gzela, it gets done. That a person is taking money, you're giving money unjustly. So therefore, ki, so it's not just ki, so, and he says, ki m'ashem, After all, how did Hashem create the world? Hashem also didn't have to use Maisa to create the world, but Hashem Shemayim Nasu. So Hashem spoke and everything came into existence. So we're telling the Dayanim, you should realize you're in the same kind of situation. You say, and the result is a Maisa takes place. So therefore, so when you're done Din Emes La'amito, then good, you're a partner to Hashem. A Maisa B'deishis, as the Gemara is going to say later, and in other places. But here, Fakert, if you judge wrongly, then it's tantamount to that you've done a Maisa, and then you're going to be in big trouble. Now, so then the Braisa continues. Shema Yomer Adayin Mali Betzaraze. Now the Dayan might think, okay, so then why should I bother with this? So he says, why do I need to get into this trouble? And what happens? Yeah, I make a mistake, and I'm going to be in deep trouble. Maybe I should just not judge Dinei Torah in the first place. So maybe I should just quit the job of being a dayan, or maybe Marshall says he might say that what do I always need the tsar? I'm always going to have to be second guessing myself. What if I didn't come up with the true verdict? Talmud Loimar. Therefore, Yehoshafat continues in his instructions to the shoftim of his times. He continues ve'imochem bedvar hamishpat. With you is a matter of judgment. Meaning, Eloi L'dayan, Ela Masha Ein Avroyas. The Dayan should just follow what his eyes see. So in other words, he has to put in his effort. He has to try his best to give a true verdict. But at the end of the day, he has to do what he can, and Hashem will help him, and Hashem will give him Siyata Dishmaya. So Hashem will be imachem with you, because again, the Shina rests among good Dayanim, and therefore, so you'll have Siyata Dishmaya as long as you put your best effort into it. As far as the same Ladayan al Mashain of Royas, we learned also a week or two ago, we had something where Rava says to his Talmidim that if you, after I'm gone, after 120, if you find a psak of mine and you don't agree with it, don't necessarily just dismiss it, don't accept it just on faith, because in Ladayan al Mashain of Royas, but don't dismiss it altogether, because after all, I might have had a reason which you don't realize. So we see this point of Ein Ladayan al Mashain of Royas is a very important principle in halacha, and so here it applies also to Dayanim. You're just expected to put in your best effort. Okay. Earlier we had quoted the pasuk Poter Mayim Reishis Modin, a pasuk from Mishlei that says the beginning, to let loose the water is the beginning of a quarrel. So we explained. Before Rashi had explained that what it meant is that was in connection with, we were talking about the whole matter of when you're allowed and not allowed to make a pshara. So we said Rav Shimon Menasi had said it depends how far along you are in the din Torah, and the vote was Poter Mayim. If you want to patter and get rid of the quarrel, which the Gemara is going to say soon, is compared to a flood of water, like a leak of water, which gets bigger and bigger, then Reishis Modin, only do it at the beginning of the argument, before you have the maso matan, before you have the give and take in the din Torah. So now the Gemara brings a different drosha on that pasuk, because the Gemara deals with, again, you have these different opinions whether you can make a pshara or not. Well, Rav Shimon Menasseh is saying you could up to a certain point. Meanwhile, we had previously Rav Eliezer ben Osher Rav Yitzchak really had said that you can't make a pshara at all as soon as the case comes to Beis Din. So what would he do with that pasuk? So the Gemara explains Amar Rav Hamnuna. He learns from it Ein Tchilas Dinei Shel Adam Nidon El Al Divrei Torah. When a person is brought to judgment in front of the Beis Din Shomayla, the first thing he's judged about is about Divrei Torah. Did he take time to learn Torah? Was he Osek Torah? Shenema, because the pasuk says Poter Mayim Reishis Modin. So here we're understanding the pasuk differently. Poter is again Meloshen Patering. So before we used it to mean Poter Mayim, you want to patter yourself from the quarrel which is compared to water. Now we're taking it in a different sense. Poter Mayim, if a person tries to patter himself from Torah, which is compared to water, a Mayim al Torah, then that becomes Reishis Modin, that becomes the beginning of the argument of the din against him in the Beis Din Shamayla, why didn't you learn Torah? Now, Tosfos points out that the Gemara in Shabbos gives a list of the questions that a person is asked in the Beis Din Shamayla after 120, and the first question is actually Nasasav and Asata Be'emuna. Did you do business honestly? Only then do they ask him a kavaita itim la Torah. So why over here are we saying the beginning of the judgment is about divrei Torah? So Tosfos gives a couple explanations. One of them is that one of them is that there you're talking about a person was osik la Torah, but he wasn't kaveya itim. So he learned here and there whenever he got around to it, but he didn't set himself up in his day 6 times in his schedule that he should be learning, which a person has to do. A person has to be kaveya itim latoda. It's not enough just whenever I get around to it, like we had in last week's Pirkei Avos. I'll turn him lachsha eshna eshna. A person has to have it. It's an important part of his schedule that there's going to be learning. That Abayim also stressed the idea it has to be not only a kviyus bizman, but a kviyus benefesh. It has to be something that's non-negotiable. Anyway, so then when a person did that, he learned Torah, but he wasn't Tevei Etim LaTorah. So then the first thing, so they can't ask him, why didn't you learn Torah? But the first thing they can ask him that after, why weren't you Tevei Etim? But the first thing they're going to ask him is, did you do business honestly? Here you're talking about, says Tosfos, that the person wasn't Osik LaTorah at all, so that will be the first thing that he's asked about. Then Tosfos gives another answer, is that they do ask him first about whether he did business honestly, but when he gets punished, if the answers aren't satisfactory to the Beis Din Shamayla, the first punishment is going to be for Divrei Torah. Therefore, we're saying over here, Ein Tchilas Dinah Shel Adam Nidon, when the verdict is decided and he starts getting his punishment, is going to be Al Divrei Torah.
What happens if a person comes to the Shiel on time? Is that a Shabbos?
That if he comes to the Shiel on time, sure, that's a Shabbos, yeah. You have a Gemara in Chetak Gigya, even, for example, tells about one of the Chachamim, Reb Yaakov Ba'idi, I think it was, who was only able to make it to the Beis Medrash 2 days a year. He lived so far away, like he'd constantly have to be traveling to go back in 3 months one way, 3 months the other way. The other Chachamim kind of made fun of him and called him Bar Bei Rab B'chad Yoyma, like, you know, Orich Mirat Tamad Chacham. He's here one day every 6 months, and I think it was Abaya had to explain to them that, no, Fakir, the Eibishter appreciates that very much, because that's his Kriya Sittin. Anyway, here's that. Marshall says another point as well is that you're talking about somebody who's able to learn. And if he would learn, he would be successful in it. So he didn't bother, so therefore Tchilas Dinah is Al Divrei Torah. Why didn't you learn? You had such capabilities, why didn't you learn? There we're talking about in Shabbos, we're talking about parts of somebody who doesn't have a head for it. Not always. Not everybody has a head for learning. Now, to be sure, there is something interesting from Tanit Ve'eliyahu. There was a story where the Yohan Navi, I've mentioned it in the shiur before, where the Yohan Navi meets up with a Yid and Amoretz and he asks him, why don't you learn Torah? And the guy says, I have no head for it. It turns out the guy's a very successful fisherman, and the Yohan tells him to tell me about your business, and the guy's telling him all about the details of the currents, and you have to know what kind of traps to use for what kind of fish, and this and that, and the Yohan tells him, you have the head for that kind of complications, and you claim you don't have the head for Torah. But here we're talking about, let's say, a person, Poshut, you know, he's a Lo Yotzlach, he doesn't have a head for Torah, he doesn't have much of a head for anything else either. So then, the first thing is going to be, is Akaponim, look, you had to do some kind of business, you were making a parnosa somehow, did you do that honestly, at least? So in fact, the Alter Rebbe brings this point of Marasha in Hilchos Talmud Torah and discusses it and says that, yeah, you have, for example, in Daf HaYomi a couple of days ago, there was a Gemara in Menachos that talked about where, to a certain extent, a person can be Yotze, this is that a person has to learn Torah of Yisabu Yom Valayla. The Gemara mentions over there, to a certain extent, a person can be Yotze even by just saying Krishna in the morning and the evening. And then you have the Gemara mentions over there, he learns Perek Echad Shachris or Perek Echad Arvis, and he's also Mekayim. So the Alter Rebbe explains, along the same lines as Marasha over here, it really depends. You know, are we talking a person who doesn't have a head for Torah, and if he learns, he's not really going to retain much of it anyhow, so then he can be Yotze with those things that we're saying over there. Mashenkin, if he has a head for it, and he would actually be successful in it, then he has a responsibility to use that head of his for Torah, and when not, then I'm saying the Beis Din Shamayla is going to ask him first, how you talking, you didn't do that. The Alter Rebbe also does mention over there that even such a person, maybe Midas Chassidus, would be for him to horover and put in whatever effort he can into learning also, even if he's not going to retain much of it. Although the Alter Rebbe goes into a bit of an arichus about it. There was a story, I think I've mentioned in the shiur before also, about the Nitziv, the famous Rosh Hashiva of Volozhin. At one point, he wrote, among other things, he wrote many sforim. So when he finished one of his sforim, I think it was a Hamak Sha'ala or whatever it was, anyway, he made a siyum for the Talmidim, and he told over a story on himself. He says when he was a boy, he wasn't a very good Talmud in Cheder. So at one point, he had gone to bed, his parents had sent him to bed, and they were sitting and talking, and, you know, what are we going to do with Hirsch Leib? He doesn't seem to be much cut out for learning. Maybe we should take him, you know, there's a shoemaker here in town, we'll go and apprentice into the shoemaker. This fellow's an Erlich Yid, he'll learn a trade, he'll learn himself an honest parnosa in that way. And little Hirsch Leib was not, in fact, asleep. He overheard what they're saying, and he committed himself, you know what, I don't want that, I don't want to be taken out of the cheder and do that, I'm going to apply myself to my learning. So now he tells, years later, he tells the Talmidim, now imagine I hadn't heard that conversation. So now what's going to happen after 120? I'd go in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, and they'd start looking over what I did with my life. They'd tell me, they'd ask me, so where's the Hamik Shalah? Where's the other Svarim that you wrote? What a Hamik Shalah? I don't know of nothing. And they'd tell me, you have the capability of writing them, and basically, in other words, you wasted your life. So he would have thought all his life, he would have thought, look, you know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to. I'm an Erlich Yid, I'm the Sosav and Asata Be'emuna, et cetera. And yet we see, in other words, a person has that capability. The attack has to know that he has it and use it. A couple of other things as far as this point of Tosfos about Nesotzav and Asata Be'emuna versus we're asking over here, I'll do very Torah. So I mentioned yesterday Binyan Shloima on Chedushim on Armasechta from Reb Nosson Maz of Frankfurt. Was actually a relative of mine. Anyway, he says that the vort is also nasasav and asata b'amunah. Doesn't mean doing business. It means when you were learning Torah, did you have a munas chachamim? And were you learning Torah l'shem shemayim? So it really is the same thing. In other words, not nasasav and asata, how did you do your business, but how did you do your Torah learning? Was it b'amunah? And then another point also some of Foshan point out is, look, you know, also a business person also is responsible to know halacha. So a person who has a store, for example, has to know large parts of Choshen Mishpat to know what he's allowed and not allowed to do. So therefore, again, the two things are really one.
Okay. Used to say,
who used to say? The Rav, yeah.
That when they are asking, did you have a munah? If you had a munah, why nosato? You know that what you're going to get is from Hashem.
It's from Hashem. So if you had a munah, why you're going to start with nosato?
Something you should have learned.
Interesting. So that's Reb Motel said that. Wow. Nice. So now the Gemara continues, getting back to this Poter Mayim Reishis Modern, where we mentioned before the idea that a quarrel is like a leak of water. So the Gemara types out, Omer Avuna, Hai Tigra, an argument, a quarrel, Damyul Tzinoda, the Bibka Demaya. It's like a leak in a levee or a dike of water. You would have a river. You'd have a river over there, and you'd have walls or levees or whatever built on the side to hold back the water so it doesn't flood the roads and the fields and whatnot. And then that's what Rashi describes. And then you have like little places in there, here and there. You have holes in it for the water to be able to go out to be able to irrigate the fields. So now if you have a leak over there, let's note the Bidka Demaya. If you have a leak in one of those, given to Ravach, once it gets bigger and bigger. If you don't plug the leak right away, then the hole is going to get bigger and bigger, and it's going to damage the dike, and eventually you're going to have a flood. The same way, in other words, an argument, if you don't deal with the matter right away, it's a poiter. Here we're understanding yet another meaning of poiter mayim. Poiter, Rashi explains that it's Moloshin peter rechem, an opening of water, a leak of water. Is racist mud, then is the beginning of a quarrel. It's like a little leak, and if you don't take care right of it right away, it's going to get bigger and bigger. Abaya Kshisha, Omar. Abaya Kshisha, this is not regular Abaya. Kshisha means the elder, so this was an Amoda of an Udiyur generation, also named Abaya. He gives a different mashal of it, Gamil Guda de Gamla. He says you can also compare it to a plank of a bridge. So you have a bridge made of wooden planks. And eventually now you have, when the bridge is first built, the planks are still a little bit loose. You've nailed them in place and all, but still, they're not tightly set in place yet. But eventually, people walk over it more and more, and eventually, given to come. Once it gets fixed in place, it gets fixed. The same way a person continues with a quarrel, then it gets stronger and stronger. So here, now, unlike Rav Huna, who compared it to a leak of water and brought a posik for it, Potamayan, Abaya Kshisha is not bringing a posik for it. He's just saying as a practical matter, you can also compare it to that. Why that comparison? So Ben Yehoyada points out, you know, it's al derech like you have. Sometimes two people get in an argument with one another, and from then on, any time they talk with one another, they're always talking in a negative and argumentative kind of way. So therefore, Abaya Kshisha is telling us over here, that's exactly what happens. A person gets into this mentality of, I don't like this guy, and I'm going to quarrel with him, then given to come, once it gets established, it gets fixed in his mind and his personality, that this is the way I'm going to talk to this guy, or in general to people, then it stays that way, and therefore, now you have to make much, much harder efforts to get rid of that mentality. Another point also, there's other Mephoshim point out, another point as well, is comparing it to a leak of water. Is to say, you know, sometimes you have people saying, if you're angry about something, vent it all out, let it all out. The problem is that sometimes you vent it all out. It doesn't make you feel any better. Adrabe, you talk it out. You start talking and yelling it out, and it increases your sense of anger about the matter. So therefore, Rav Huna is warning, don't do that. On the other hand, Abaye Trisha is telling us, but don't bottle it up either, because then that's going to be like a plank of wood that's just more and more fixed in place, and that's not good either. You have to have, like the Gemara tells us elsewhere, Doga Belev Ishia, Yisichen El Acherim, talk it over with somebody else, but talk it over not in a way where you're venting and yelling, but in a way where you're telling it over in a way that'll help, that'll be able to help get it over. Yeah, you know, the Rama mentions in Hilchos Deos also, for example, we have the mitzvah of Sisna Sachicha Bovavecha, don't hate a fellow Yid in your heart. You have something against him, tell him, don't bottle it up. So now the Gemara is going to start quoting a bunch of things where somebody was walking along. Ahuda have a karma ba'azel, a person was walking along and saying. The Gemara is going to bring seven expressions like that, and each one of them we're going to find a pasuk that expresses the idea that this guy is saying. The first one of them is going to be with this pasuk, poitamayim, reishis modern, which is why the Gemara is bringing it in. So the Gemara says, Ahuda have a karma ba'azel, there was a guy walking along and saying, Tuvei de Shoma v'Odish, when it's good for a person, when he hears people making fun of him or whatever, and he's quiet. Odish means two things. It actually explains, it means he's quiet. The word Odish means to be quiet, and in modern Hebrew you have, for example, the word Adish means that somebody indifferent. And also that he gets used to it. People will say whatever they want against him, he gets used to it, and he doesn't allow it to bother him. Chafua bishdamneya, 100 bad things will pass him by. 100 bad things that could have happened to him as a result of continuing the quarrel, but he stays quiet and he keeps his peace, so he avoids those 100 evils. So Shmuel tells his Talmud Rabbi Yehuda, Kroksiv, and you know what, there's a pasuk that expresses the same idea. This pasuk that we've just said, Poter Mayim Reishis Modrein, where we can understand the word, so here, Poter Mayim, where he... The person, so it means here we're taking the word poiter in the sense of starting it, opening it up. Like Rashi had said before, peter rechem. When a person starts a quarrel, reish modern, that's the reishis modern, where the word modern means reish meyadini. It's the beginning of 100 judgments, either because the word modern sounds like meyadini, or Rashi points out the word modern itself is gematria 100. So if he starts the quarrel, then it's the beginning of 100 evils. If he doesn't, if he lets it pass by him and audition, he's quiet and indifferent to it, then he avoids those 100 evils. There is a well-known vert in that, but also that's brought that if a person is insulted, especially in public, and he doesn't answer back, he has tremendous power to give brachas. There are stories along those lines. There's actual stories that happen where people, for example, who didn't have children for many years, they met up with somebody who did that, or was insulted in public and didn't answer back, and were able to get a bracha from them and had children afterwards. And there are a number of such stories out there about that. So here we see that he saves himself from Neyadim. Rav Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, has a very interesting essay in Torah Levi Yitzchak on this piece of Gemara. Again, we're going to have seven things that the Gemara is going to bring over here, where Hahu Dehava Ka'omer V'Ozel, somebody is walking by and saying, and Rav Levi has a very long explanation explaining Api Nigla and Api Kabbalah, as he always does, explaining deeper ideas behind what's going on over here. One thing he points out is that the seven sayings over here correspond to the seven spheres from Chesed through Chesed to Malchus, and Shmuel speaking to Rabbi Yehuda, he explains Shmuel represents Bina, and Rabbi Yehuda represents Malchus, except for the seventh one, we're going to have Rav Huna, as we'll get to later on. And he goes in detail. Here where you have this one, the guy's first word is Tuvei, Tuvei, as in Avraham Avinu, who personified Midas HaChesed. And the expression va'odish, he relates to the word like dosh ba'akevav, as we have the expression eikev ashashama Avraham v'koli, and the 100 refers to the fact that Avraham was 100 when he had Yitzchak, and it refers to the 100 sounds of the shofar. The shama also means the person hears the sound of the shofar, and that also evokes the Eivishtes Chesed, and he goes and explains ba'arichos, how everything we're saying over here represents the Chesed of Avraham Avinu. Next, Tahu Dava Kalmav Ozel. By the way, when we had before Kurta Mayim Reshus Modern about it means Chilas Dinashal Odom Al Divrei Torah, Ben Yehoyada points out another fascinating angle in it. You look at the letters Modern, Mem Dalad Vav Nun. If you take now the letter before, if you take the letters before each one of them in the Aleph phase, before the Mem is Lamed, before the Dalad is Gimel, etc., you'll have the word, rearrange them, you'll have the word Megillah. Where the Gemara tells us, Gemara in Erevin, that tells us that Torah Shabbal Peh is compared in the Pesukim to a Megillah. So therefore, Reishis Modern, what comes before Modern, is what the person is being asked about in the Beis Din Shamayla. Did you learn Torah Shabbal Peh? Did you learn what's compared to the Megillah? Next, Tahu Dava Ka'omav Ozel, a person was walking along and saying, Atarti Tlas Ganvalei Mikto. For two or three thefts, a ganav does not get killed. So meaning, in other words, he meant it to say. In other words, Rashi says, if you see that a person does an aveira a couple of times and he hasn't been punished yet, don't think, you know what, it means he's not going to get punished. The same way as a ganav can get away with it a couple of times, but eventually he's going to get what's coming to him. So Omale Shmuel Rav Yehuda. So Shmuel tells Rav Yehuda also. Kroxim. Here also you have a pasuk that expresses this idea. Hashem says through the Navi, Koyaman Hashem, Al Shloisha Pishe Yisrael, for three averus that the Jewish people have done, then I'm willing to forgive them and to let it go for the time being. Val Arba, but for the fourth one, Moyashivena, I'm not going to hold back my punishment. We have this at the beginning of the Haftorah Parshas Vayeshev. So we see, in other words, the Pasuk is expressing the same idea. Hashem is saying they've been doing three Averis. It actually explains over there, Averis Zorah, Gilu Arayis, and Shvichas Damim, and I'm willing to be moichel them for the time being. But Bala Bob, once they're doing a fourth one, Moyashivenu. Now, Maushra points out, a ganav, after all, doesn't get executed. So what do you mean, Loi Miktil? And in Halacha, a ganav doesn't get killed. So he says, evidently, we're talking about the Baba Machteris. We're talking about, later on in the Masechta, it talks about a Ganav who breaks into a house, where the din is, as it says in Parshas Mishpatim, Ein Lo Domim, the Balabos can kill him, because we have to assume that he's coming with intent to kill. So nevertheless, we're saying it can happen two or three times. He's not yet muhzak in doing that kind of thing. Maybe after all, maybe he's hungry. Maybe he's taka lacking food or whatever. So therefore, maybe don't kill him yet. But once you see he's done it two or three times, which already makes a chazaka, then already kill him. He's a baba machteres, and then you have good reason to think that he's coming. That he's coming with intent to kill. Similarly, also Marshall points out, you also have a din later in the Masechta that under certain circumstances, when a person has done the same aveda over and over again, then there are times when based in Machnis and Oysim Lekippa, they put him into a small prison cell basically, and they give him a starvation diet over there. We'll talk about the details of it later in the Masechta. So there also he has to do it two or three times before he gets sentenced to that. So therefore it expresses the same idea. In Reb Levick's exposition over there, he explains that. So one thing is though, the first of all, he explains that this has to do with Gvura, and he explains in detail how a ganav has to do with Gvura. But anyway, he points out, you know, on the face of it, the fellow who's walking along, he says two or three times. But what is Hashem saying over here? For Shloisha, I'm willing to set it aside, but for Abba, then not. So on the face of it, there's a Pasuk in Iyov that would be a much better match for it. The Pasuk says clearly over there, Hein kol ela yifal keil pamayim shalosh im gavar. Hashem is willing to do these things two or three times with a person before he's going to bring down the hammer. So then why doesn't Shmuel quote that Pasuk instead? And so the Levick explains that actually the ganav we're talking about over here is actually a kidnapper. And that would explain why he's chayiv misa, because later in the Masechta it talks about going of nefesh is chayiv misa. And actually, the great example of kidnapping in the Torah is Yosef's brothers kidnapping and selling him to Mitzrayim. So therefore, that's why the Gemara is bringing this pasuk al shloisha pishi Yisrael, because what does the pasuk continue? Al michrim b'ketzef tzadik ve'evyan b'avu na'alayim. They sold a tzadik for money and for pairs of shoes, which is in fact what they did with the money that they got for selling Yosef. So therefore, that's why Shmuel brings that pasuk in order to evoke the sale of Yosef, and that explains why the guy is saying that the ganav may get away with it temporarily, but not forever, as we see they didn't end up getting away with it either. Okay. Next, Tahu Dava Ka'omav Ozel, a guy was walking along and saying, these are all like popular expressions that the guy was saying, and each one of them was saying there's a source for it in Torah. In general, everything, so one of the lessons of this whole piece of Gemara is even you hear somebody saying a popular saying, you should know that there has to be a source for it somewhere in Torah. So the guy was saying, Shev Biri the Shamana, there may be seven pits for the peaceful person. So in other words, there may be one pit after another in his path, and nevertheless he's gonna be saved from all of them. V'chad, and then there's only one, La'oivad Bish, for the person who acts in a bad way, there's just gonna be one pit and he'll fall into it right away. So Amalei Shmuel, Rav Yehuda, so Shmuel explains Rav Yehuda, Kroksiv, here also you have a pasuk that expresses this idea. Ki sheva yipol tzaddik v'kam, the tzaddik will fall seven times, but then he'll get up. V'rosha yipol ba'achas, but the rosha will fall in just one. On the side of it here, it mentions from Yad Yosef, the actual pasuk doesn't say that, but instead the pasuk says, or Rishoyim yikoshlu bara, the Rishoyim will stumble in their evil. So in other words, again, the same idea, that the first danger that comes to them, they end up falling into it and getting harmed by it.
Because of
a
tzaddik, even though he's falling.
So we call him a tzaddik, even though he's falling. Yeah, I mean, now, the Alter Rebbe mentions in the introduction to Shara Yichud V'Emunah that one meaning of the Sheva Yipot Tzaddik V'Kam means, in other words, throughout his life, a tzaddik he needs to go from one madrega to the next, but each time, like he's temporarily losing the milah that he had from the previous one. Al Derech, like we have Reb Zera having to fast in order to forget the Talmud Bavli in order to learn the Talmud Yerushalmi. Nevertheless, he still remains a tzaddik. He still has his underlying emunah, which keeps him going from one as he goes from one level to the next. Marsha explains over here that what we're talking about is, we are talking about a tzaddik. That's when we say over here, the shalmana doesn't mean a peaceful person, it means a wholesome, a complete person, a tzaddik. So now when we say that there are seven pits in his way, it means the shiva koichle lechas. So imagine you have the astrology right now, all of the positions of all the planets are all aligned in a way that shows it's very unfavorable to him. So you would think that in that case he's a goner. Nevertheless, because of his schus, then Hashem changes his mazel and overrides all of those. Over all those seven pits, all those seven dangers, all those seven unfavorable mazolis of his. But the Rosha, just the opposite. Even if the mazolis seem to show that he's going to have a good time of it, then he can fall into one. Just his rishus alone will harm him, and all of his mazol, all the shiva koichli leches, and the powers that come through them are not going to help him. Hahu to have a kam of ozel, another guy was walking along and then saying, and he says, de ozel mi bei dina, when a person is leaving Beis Din after a din Torah, shoklu grime, even if they took his coat because he had to pay and he didn't have money to pay and they have to take away his talus to make him pay, Lizmar Zemer, he should sing a song, the Lezel Ba'urcha, and go on his way. Because after all, it was a din emes, so you should realize that Rashi says he didn't actually lose anything that he wasn't supposed to lose. It means, in other words, that there was an effect, like we learned before, he had Gzela, he had money that was illegally in his possession, and now it was taken from him, so then he should be happy that now he's rid of that. Marsha points out that a glimmer is a we're not talking about his undershirt or something, we're talking about something that a person wears for covered. So it would be the equivalent, like nowadays, of a kapota or something like that. So now, they took him to pay his chayv. So therefore he should be happy that he doesn't have this covered, but nevertheless, still this way he shouldn't be upset about it and be arguing afterwards. He should realize that afterwards it was a din emes, and he should be happy that he's rid of something that was otherwise a burden on him. So Amalei Shmuel, Rav Yehuda, Peroxid. Here's another thing where you have a pasuk that expresses this idea. Yisrael tells Moshe, once you set up Bate Dinim, the Gamkola Amazal Makoma Yavah B'Shalom, this whole nation will now come to their place in peace. So in other words, what do you mean the whole nation? When you have two parties to a Din Torah, one of them is going to like the result and the other one not. Nevertheless, they're all going to be B'Shalom, because even the one who lost is still, as the guy is saying in his phrase, is going to go along singing, and he should be happy that the verdict was given. Given justly, and that he's rid of something that otherwise would have been gezel of his.
Not in
the
right?
Well, in the of course, yeah. Yeah, it was shocked, they took his garment, that's the ominous, yeah. Okay. Another guy was walking along and saying, she, a popular expression, she naimer v'dikula shofel. The woman is napping and falling asleep, and the basket on her head is falling off. So in those days, women would often wear a basket on their head that contained, Rashi points out, that women would often spin thread or do other jobs like that. So they would have a basket where they'd keep their knitting needles and other things like that that they're using for spinning thread or weaving or whatever it is exactly. So now if the woman is falling asleep, then the basket is going to fall off her head. So it was a figure of speech. In other words, when you have a person gets lazy, then their work suffers. The quality of their work suffers. So Amar Lishmuel, that have you heard of Kruxid? Here's another thing where you have a pasuk that expresses that idea. Ba'atzaltayim, as a result of laziness, yimach hamakora, the roof starts sagging. In other words, Pashut, you know, you have a person is industrious. If he realizes there's a leak or something the matter with his roof, he'll fix it right away. As opposed to if he's lazy, then the roof is going to continue sagging and he's not going to notice and eventually the thing is going to fall down. Expressing the same idea, in other words, a person has to be on the ball and be on top of their work. Another guy was walking along and saying, Gavra d'rechitzna alei, the person that I was trusting in, that I thought was my friend, Adyel Gzize, he lifted up his fist, the cum, and he stood up against me. He showed himself to be my enemy. So Shmuel says to Rabbi Yehuda, here's also, you have a pasuk, Truxim, the pasuk says, David expresses himself about people he thought were his friends. Gam ish shloime ashevatachti boy, even the person that I was at peace with, whom I trusted in, particularly he's talking about Oich Achitofel, who was his trusted advisor and then turned against him, like we learned a few days ago. Oich Lachmi, who ate my bread, which also means who learned Torah from me. Higdil Olai Okev has now increased and made big his heel against me, like he's picking up his heel to stomp on me. So we see the same idea, in other words, that David is saying, this is a person I thought I could trust, and now he shows himself to be my enemy. Marsha points out, another meaning of it can also be, what's this become over here? It means, let's say a guy is sleeping, so he has somebody standing over him as his bodyguard. Now instead, this bodyguard, instead of watching him, goes and starts standing up against him, and he's going to hit him. So therefore, so also, you have, and David is describing there in Kapitel Mem Aleph, he's talking about that he's lying in bed, Basha Shochav Lo Yosef Lokum, and nevertheless, this guy is standing up against me and threatening to stomp on me and to hit me. So there also you have a pasuk that expresses this idea. In Rebbelezer's thing over there, he explains over there again how each one of these represents a different midah. Here he talks about that it represents Yisoid, where Malchus depends on Yisoid, and then all of a sudden Yisoid kind of like turns against Malchus and shows itself to be unfriendly. There's a long arichus over there about the exact meaning of Adil Exize and a whole bunch of interesting side points that he makes over there. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, for Heir. The main point that in every Yid's life has to be, as we say in the Haggadah, Kol Yimei Chayecha, Lohavi the Moshe Mashiach, that a person's chayus, every moment has to be about bringing you Moshe Mashiach, and that automatically brings a person to a standpoint, in a situation of your Moshe Mashiach. And why do we say your Moshe Mashiach in plural? Because, as we know, there are two general tzkufos. In your Moshe Mashiach, it also represents the different degrees of Aliyah, the different degrees of elevation, one after the other, that are going to be in Yom Moshe Mashiach. Miyad Mamash. Okay, so we started talking about how the tzitzis are made. We said you have a certain amount of windings, and you have a certain amount of hanging loose threads. So the minhag is you have 7, then 8, then 11, then 13 windings. That way it adds up to 39, which is the gematria of Havaya Echad. So the first three alone, 7, 8, and 11, add up to Havaya, and the 13 is Echad. Now, it's nicer when each group of windings takes up the same amount of space. We said yesterday from Raya Mehemna that there should be an agudo, there should be a thumb's width between one knot and the next. So in any case, they should all be equal in size. So therefore, what you do is, so now when you have 7 and then you have 8, in a space where later on you're going to have 11 and 13, so space them apart a little bit. If you have a look at the tzitzis that you buy in a store, tzitzis that are tied by a professional, you'll notice, Taka, that in the 7 and the 8 you have significant spaces between the windings. Then you get to the 11, they're closer together, and in the 13 they're closest of all. Basically, the idea is that, so again, you have the 7 and 8 together equals Yud K, and then the 11 is the Vav, is the Vav K, and the 13 is Echad. So you do it that way. Then you have there's the minhag, some have the minhag to make them as choyas, to make them as groups of three, which is, in fact, our minhag. So that would be that you make a group of three, and then you have a space, and then another group of three, and so forth, and you have then you get to the end of the seven, you make one over there, and then the next one you do two, and then another, and then three and three, and you continue like that throughout the whole thing. So you end up with 39, and they're made into 13 choyos. This is in fact how they did when they had tchelas, where they would make them in choyos in groups like that, and that's kind of how we do.
Just a minute, there is no meaning behind it.
The idea behind it is, in other words, that this is because the Gemara speaks of making choyas. So one way of looking at it is choya would mean a group of three windings. So in other words, the idea is you could say that choyas just means plain windings, like the Velt does it, just one after the other. But another way of looking at it is a choyas specifically means a group of three, and therefore that's what we do. We make them in groups of three. And as it says in Sefer Minhagim, what we do is we have the beginning of one makes up for whatever's missing from the previous one. So you have the seven, it's three, three, and one, and then the next one is two, three, and three. Then there were 3, 11. It's 3, 3, 3, and 2. And since you need one more to make 3, then in the last one you have 1, and then you have 4 groups of 3. Yeah, take a look at your talus. Take a look at your talus cotton. You'll notice the details. By the way, there's a Tosfos, by the way, in Menachos that mentions that one of the things that a Talmud Chacham should know is how to tie tzitzis. So it is something worth learning. Okay, so again, all of this is only l'hatchila, b'diyeved, a person already finished making the tzitzis and didn't do this properly. Or you could have, let's say, imagine you're 5 minutes before Shabbos, you realize that your tzitzis need to be fixed, and you don't have time to make all the windings and everything, so you just did minat Torah, again, one choya, one winding, and one knot above that is enough, so then that's good enough, and you can wear such tzitzis on Shabbos, b'shas
etchak. I just want to give a good yesha talk for everybody. We had more than a minion today in the field.
Oh, very good. Shabbat.